Could you state your name, please?
My name is Eleazar Lessing, but I'm always called Ed.
Could you spell your name for the record?
Eliazar, Eleazar.
And your last name too? Could you spell that?
Lessing, Lessing.
And your age?
I'm 86 years old.
And your date of birth?
It's May 8, 1926.
And today's date?
Today's date is November 9, 2012.
We're talking today because during World War II, you were a young, you were a teenager in Holland in a Jewish family. And we're talking today about your experiences during the German occupation and the Holocaust. Tell me a little bit about, you have a very unusual family history. Tell me a little bit about your family and living in Holland before the war. Where were you from in Holland? I guess it's a place to start.
Well, from various places, but the last place during the war was in Delft, a famous little town of pottery and painters. However, that's not where I was born. I was born I like to joke, but I was born in Bethlehem. Which was a Catholic hospital in The Hague where my mother gave birth to me. My parents were a very liberal group, but very Jewish. We descended from a long line of Dutch Jews. My father was his name was Nathan Lessing, and he was a musician. He was a cellist. He played mostly in restaurants and theaters and. My mother's name was Angeline Elizabeth Van Leer, Vanleer. She had a very good Dutch name, which comes up later on in my story. That's very, very important. And she had been, as a young woman, had come out of a slum in The Hague, and had grown up and had worked herself out and became a telegraph operator, which was very unusual for a Jewish girl in those days, of course. And my mother had a sister who lived in the United States. And so in 1929, my parents emigrated from Holland to the United States. And we lived here for 3 years.
Where in the States? Where?
We mostly, well, mostly in Massachusetts. My parents, my father, immediately upon, of course, 1929 was the worst year to come here in the first place. My father got tuberculosis, had to go into a hospital in Holyoke, Massachusetts. My mother and I lived in Boston, and my mother had to go to work to support me. I was farmed out to a woman. And during those 3 years, but after 3 years, we returned. My father got an offer for a job. My father actually got better. He got an offer for a job. He played one job in a hotel, summer job in a hotel in New Hampshire, which is also an interesting story in itself. But after 3 years, we returned to Holland. As I always say, just in time for the Holocaust. 1932, we were back in Holland. I started to go to elementary school. And my parents moved around. They tried various things. My father tried to get out of music, and they did all kinds of interesting things.
Was your family particularly religious?
They were not religious at all. As a matter of fact, I really didn't know that I was Jewish. The first time that I found out that I was Jewish was when I was about 11 years old. 1937, when a classmate of mine in elementary school asked me if I would be interested to join his Cub Scout group. And I didn't know what it was, but I said, well, he said, well, what do you do? He said, well, we play games on Sunday in the park and so on, and it's interesting. So I visited them, I joined them, and I found out somehow or another that it was a Jewish Cub Scout group. In Holland, the Scouts were divided like everything else, and Roman Catholic Scouts, Protestant Scouts, and there were two Jewish groups in Holland. I joined as a group in The Hague and became a Jewish Cub Scout. And to give an example, one of my fellow Cubs asked, "Are you going to come for the Seder?" And I said, "What's a Seder?" He said, "Well, it's a meal that we do during Passover." And I said, "What's Passover?" And so that was my initiation into being Jewish. So that finally, when the war came and when the Jewish measures against us started up, it was all kind of strange to me, you know. So, to answer your question, my parents were not a member of a synagogue, although my grandfather, after whom I'm named, Eliezer, was a very religious man, I understand. Mm-hmm. He was almost blind, and he was a shoemaker, and they lived in a slum, as I said before. And the whole family, my mother's two sisters and brother, all worked themselves out and became teachers and stuff like that. So,
when did you...
We arrived in 1939. We moved from The Hague, big city in The Hague, to the smaller city of Delft.
Were your parents very alarmed by the rise of Hitler in Germany, which after all was right next door? Was that seen as a threat when you were a young boy?
It's very interesting. There was hardly any awareness of this. And I cannot really tell you, but my father worked, for instance, with a light opera company that was formed and run by German Jews who had fled to Holland. And we had the only thing that I knew about German Jews was that we had a little baker who came with a bread cart venting, and he would deliver bread to our home, and he had a very heavy German accent to his Dutch. And my mother said, "Well, you know, he's from Germany." For the rest, I had no awareness of that. I had no awareness. Because I was a 13-year-old, 14-year-old kid. It was, I was a Dutch boy. Mm-hmm. In all aspects. I was educated in the Dutch schools. I can still sing you all kinds of Dutch little songs that I learned in elementary school and so on and so forth. So I was very Dutch and no awareness of all, at all.
And your parents or your family didn't experience any discrimination because you were Jewish? There was no overt anti...
Not that I ever heard of. My father sometimes would say something when he worked with a Hungarian group once playing in a restaurant or in a hotel, I think. And they were Hungarian gypsy types, musicians. And he said, "They're all anti-Semites, you know. They're all anti-Semites. The Hungarians, all anti-Semites." So, okay. That's about the best I guess. No, Holland was pretty free of anti-Semitism, you know. There were members, the president of the Supreme Court was a Jew in Holland. Mm-hmm. For instance.
Do you remember the outbreak of war?
Oh, and how?
Tell me about that.
Well, my birthday is on May 8th. And in May 8th, 1940, I had a wonderful birthday. In Delft is a little town crisscrossed by canals. We lived on a house that was right on one of those canals. And just like in Amsterdam, with little white bridges over it. My parents gave me a used kayak. Mm-hmm. for my 14th birthday. That was on May 8th. It was wonderful, very happy day. May 10, 2 days later, I woke up at 5 o'clock in the morning. There was a heavy machine gun fire. Seemed right next to my bed almost. But when I looked out the window down in the street, there was a machine gun nest situated right in front of our front door. and that was firing on large planes that were roaring over our house. Now, I'm addicted. I always was addicted to flying into planes. There's a whole
collection
of little airplane models. This last summer, I still built two little planes. I'm a boy at heart, I guess. But here, these marvelous planes were roaring right over us. And when I looked up in the sky, the whole sky was filled with white parachutes that were dropping down all around the town of Delft. And I thought that it was an exercise of the Dutch army. And of course, very soon we found out through the radio that no, this was not the Dutch army. These were German. Germany had invaded Holland.
Which was neutral, wasn't it?
Holland was neutral. And not only that, but Holland had been, through the First World War, totally neutral. We had never seen. The last time that Holland was invaded was during the rule of Napoleon in the 1800s. So the Dutch were firmly convinced that they would stay out of the Second World War also. But here they were. And in 5 days, the Queen fled, the Dutch Queen Wilhelmina fled to London. Her cabinet followed the day after. They left the country in the hands of a general who wasn't really entitled to run the country. And in 5 days, the Germans bombarded the city of Rotterdam into a mess. And in 5 days, it was all over, and German soldiers marched right by our front door, singing loudly in German that they were going to go to England and win the war. It's very strange to see these men in these short boots, and Dutch soldiers never sang. They always tried to get out of the army. And here were these enthusiastic men, you know, with boots that sounded on our cobblestone streets, and marching and singing. And so that was the introduction to war, and it was all over in 5 days, and then everything seemed to go back to normal.
Mm-hmm. For how long did things go back to normal? How long did that period of return to normality go on for, though? Because obviously things were not normal.
I seem to remember, or I may make this up, but I seem to remember discussions about my parents and their friends, who were mostly Jewish musicians. My father, all his friends were musicians, and many of them were Jews. And there were discussions. Now the Germans all of a sudden were in Holland. All of a sudden there was this awareness what they had done in Germany to the Jews. You know, Kristallnacht, mm-hmm. Burned the synagogues, burned the books. And the discussion went on. I seem to remember friends coming over and discussing with my parents, do you think they're going to do the same thing to us what they did in Germany? And the consensus in Holland by Dutch Jews, very naive now, of course, when we look back, was, they wouldn't dare to do that. We're a democratic country. We don't have all that anti-Semitism that the Germans had, you know. So we were... I think my parents were pretty much convinced that. And there was something else. The discussion also was the war would pretty soon be over. In 6 months, the Germans would be defeated and they'd go back home, and then this whole crazy period would be over. So there was no awareness of danger. Until the first messages and decrees started coming up in the paper.
When was that?
Well, that started, I can't really tell you, I haven't got the data in my hand, but it was within a year of May 10, 1940. The first decrees were very strange, were that Dutch Jews could no longer be members of the air raid warden, corps, which was a volunteer organization. Mm. Then one of the first next one was that all civil servants had to assign forms which they declared that they were either Jewish or they were not Jewish. should have been a warning sign. The next thing was a registration at your own town hall, but to your own burgomaster, sent you a letter that said you should come and register as a Jewish person, and you would get a form, and you'd pay one guilder for that, and you had carefully saved that because you might need it at some future date. And there was a little threat. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Those who refused to come and register, they might lose all their property.
Mm-hmm. Other than these sort of slowly encroaching regulations, did life go on more or less as normal though? People went to work, your father went to work?
Yeah, you went and registered. My parents had never broken a law in their life. If the mayor said you come and sign this paper, so what? Not realizing that sign set up a card system that had every Jew in Holland registered. It was the noose that they put around our neck for the future.
And how many Jews were there in Holland? There
were 140,000 Jews in Holland when the Germans came.
Out of a population of about, what was the total population approximately?
I think there were about between 8 and 9 million people in Holland. Mm-hmm. By the way, of the 140,000, 110,000 never returned and were killed. It's the highest percentage of any Western European country, by far, mm-hmm. by far. So, yes, these decrees started coming, and they were all in our Jewish paper. They were not in the daily paper that everybody read, so that the Gentiles shouldn't get disturbed what was happening, you know. Mm-hmm. In short order, it's the usual story. I always say what the Germans did took 6 years in Germany to do, they did in Holland in 2 years. They had gotten very good at it. In short order, we were banned from trains, public transportation. We couldn't have radios. Radios had to be brought to town hall. We couldn't go to movie houses, couldn't go to the beach, I couldn't go to my swimming pool. Of course, my Cub Scout group was, all Boy Scout groups were dissolved, but any youth group mm-hmm. were dissolved in halls. They were all dangerous to them, mm-hmm. of course. So the net got tighter and tighter, mm-hmm. and yet our life still went on. I mean, I still have my friends and you know, and stuff like that, and I couldn't go swimming. And then the decree came that Jewish kids couldn't go to public schools anymore. Mm-hmm. They could only be educated in Jewish schools. Now Delft, being a very small town, didn't have any Jewish schools, so I was out. Mm-hmm. I found a job as a delivery boy for a pharmacy in Holland.
Mm-hmm. Were your parents? How did your parents navigate this period?
Well, it was very interesting. We had come to Delft because my grandfather, who was a tailor originally, but had become a big shot in a clothing factory in Amsterdam. He had seen something that he thought might be appropriate for, this was before the Germans came, might be appropriate for my parents. It was opening a store, in a sense, of men's clothing, suits, pants, raincoats, in a regular residential home. No show window, no nothing. So my parents rented this house on Delft, on a canal, a regular row house. And the bottom floor was transformed with racks, steel racks, with it was very, very Spartan, but the prices were very low. And filled it up with suits and raincoats, and there was a tiny little sign on the door that said that this was a clothing store, and people came and they bought. So they were in business for themselves, in a sense. Mm-hmm. But of course, eventually, Jews were not allowed to have businesses either anymore, and they had to sell. And I think what my parents did, they tried to sell And by that time, also rationing had come into, so you couldn't buy a suit. You had to have textile coupons. But my parents, I think, sold, when they knew that it was going to end, sold suits and raincoats and pants without textile coupons. And I think the money that they made, this is my guess, must have supported us during our hiding period. Because my brothers and I have often said, how did we survive without money, without working, without, you know? Anyway, so eventually the store was closed and we moved to another house in Delft. And my parents there, it was a big house, 17-room house. Mm-hmm. And they rented out rooms to students, Delft being a university town. And so this is what we did until we went into hiding.
How about your non-Jewish neighbors? Did you continue to have good relations with your non-Jewish friends?
Yes, in Delft, we had some relations with Dutch Jewish friends in Delft, but Delft didn't have a big Jewish population.
I was thinking about the non-Jewish population. How about your non-Jewish
friends? Non-Jewish population. Thank God we did, because we wouldn't have known where to go when the time came to go into hiding.
Was there any sort of any Dutch collaborations at this point? Did you see any signs of collaboration with the Germans?
Yes, of course you did. There was a Dutch Nazi organization called the NSB, National Socialist Bond, Bund. And they were kind of, they had a leader who was kind of an idiot, but the Germans, of course, gave him some power. And you see, we lived in a small town, Delft. If you lived in Amsterdam, the situation was entirely different. There were fights between Jews in the beginning.